These much too charming people, April 21, 1928. And so the butterfly days are over. For me there shall be no more lolling in the sweet pale sunshine, no more laughing and singing and using words and sentences through the dear and fragrant little hours of the night, no more getting up in the steely noons with a hangover that ought to be in the Smithsonian Institution under glass. I have flung the last of my roses, riotously before the throng. I have gone earnest. I have a purpose. I have a cause. My white plume, please, Meadows, and tell them to have my favorite charger at the door in 10 minutes. My life and my arms are now and hereafter consecrated to the services of the Society for the Abolition of Charm. It would be advisable, perhaps, for the Society to make a drive for new members, for thus far I am the President, Vice President, Secretary, Board of Directors, List of Members, and Greens Committee, and there is such a thing as keeping an organization too exclusive. Yet there is little reason to fear that the Society will pine and die for want of new blood, for surely there must be countless numbers of strong and restless souls who are so good and sick of conscious charm that they would willingly drop everything and join in the movement for its stamping out. There is entirely too much charm around, and something must be done to stop it. For a time I was passive about the thing. I came up against all the better-known varieties of charm in succession. The wistful, the hardy, the puckish, the sparkling, the shy, the naive, that's the kind I'd like to get after first, if it's all right with you. The mysterious, the dry, the sporadic, the quaint, and the purely physical, and took them meekly as part of the fardels to which we are all heir. But then it began to get a little thick and sticky. Everywhere I looked, I saw people going charming. Charm flowed like water and appeared to be turned on and off in the manner of the same necessary liquid. I couldn't get away from it. The only place I was safe from charm was in my own bed. And you know yourself, you do have to get out of bed once in a while, if only to see what the headlines say. My first idea was to flee the whole works, and escape to some mountain fastness, some wild and thunderous pass. I was holding out, as I recall, for a spot called Rising Gorge, as appropriate to my condition, where these over-charming people would never penetrate. But that would have been the deed of a coward, and though we may ride hard, we mad marches, and lie and swear and raise checks, there are two things we cannot do. We can never resist an officer, or a private, and we never turn yellow. The thing to do was to face the evil and strive to wipe it out. That was how I got into my cause. Then and there was born the Society for the Abolition of Charm. It has not yet been definitely decided how the Society is to go about its work of banishing charm from the face of the earth, but as soon as there are some more members, we might meet out in back of the barn and see what can be done. An event that speeded up the founding of the Society was the publication of Miss G. B. Stern's novel, Debonair. The book takes its faintly revolting title from its hero's conception of its heroine. Thus does he think of her, and thus, I regret to say, does he address her. So, in like manner, did I ever have a beau, he might ponder on me, and apostrophize me as shiftless. I yield to nobody that I can think of in my admiration for Miss Stern. She is, I think, a fine and sharp and skillful writer. It has been ever a source of sad amazement to me that there was not international screaming over her The Dark Gentleman, which is as delicate and shrewd a satire as I know, and the best dog story I have ever read. I wish that last bit of that sentence were higher praise, for, though I am one who turns practically faint with love at the sight of a dog a block away, the usual uplifting tale of the noble beast who gives his life for his master's girlfriend, or his master's enemy, according to the powers of the author, is a thing that I am utterly unable to spell out. Miss Stern wrote of her dogs without coquetry, sentimentality, or brutality, thus establishing a record. Her dogs were none of your cold, pure, brave, noble beasts, and so their doings were absorbing reading. Well, you know, it's the same way with books about people who are not all cold, pure, brave, and noble. It's a thorn to me that nothing much is done about The Dark Gentleman. I knew a few who had heard of it, and I know of none to whom I've suggested it, who ever wants to read much of anything else. Oh, I beg your pardon, I was supposed to be talking about Debonair, wasn't I? Well, it seems to me that in this latest book of hers, Miss Stern has had that thing happen to her which befalls most fine satirists. By the nature of her gift, she writes superbly of people she hates. But when she tries to do a character whom she likes and wishes her readers to like, the result is appalling. The heroine of Debonair, her name is Loveday, which looked at from any angle is pretty hard to do with, is one of those charming girls. Indeed, she's so full of charm that she's practically painting with it. Now, charm is bad enough to meet with in daily life, as we were saying not 5 minutes ago, but God deliver you and me from charm on paper. I have yet to have an author inform me that a character is charming, and then, by that character's deeds and conversation, convince me of the fact. Loveday, would you mind if I referred to her simply as L? I have my health to think of. Is one of those cute, 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 reckless, scatterbrained, daring, but golden-hearted young women that always make me want to get out the trusty old gun that Grandpa carried all through the Civil War without firing a shot. Oh, how gaily and irresponsibly she does rattle on all during the book. Happy me, she calls herself, and she addresses her mother as Lambert. Then she has a little way of saying quee instead of queer, and there's one occasion where she employs pew rather than use the less whimsical pure. In short, I cannot tell you how not hungry it makes me to follow her conversation. Debonair may be her lover's word for her, but God-awful will ever be her nickname with me. There is, unfortunately, so very much of Elle in the book, and it's quee how little of that pew young thing is enough to last you a lifetime, that you close it with her alone in your mind. And that's too bad, for in Debonair, Miss Stern has done, out of her bright and exquisite bitterness, two fine portraits, those of Elle's mother and of the mother of the hero. Elle's mother seems to me a little less successful than the other. She is the silver cord lady, portrayed unerringly at first, but as the book progresses, gone over into exaggeration. But the hero's mother, Petal to my friends, Petal that suits her, that sweet, fragile, beloved, gentle devil of a woman is, I think, as true and sure and skilled a portrayal as I have seen in 20 years of hard reading. I wish, so that a fine novel need not have been betrayed, that Debonair could have been done without its title role, but there is a little comfort to be had from the queer young lady. Read about her, and you will immediately send in your application for membership in the Society for the Abolition of Charm. That girl will do much to put society on its feet. Put the white plume back in the cupboard, Meadows, if you please. Miss Stern's Loveday is taking over my work for the cause.